Radio.
You're listening to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast that explores the bold projects, exciting opportunities, and the growing reach of blockchain and cryptocurrency. Whether you've got skin in the game or you're just crypto curious, keep an open mind, enjoy the conversation, and stay CryptoCurrent. Now here's your host, Richard Carthon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of CryptoCurrent. Your host here, Richard Carthon. And today I got another special guest all the way in Berlin. Excited to learn so much about his really cool company. So today we have Joshua with Volturo. How are you doing today?
Good, good. I'm doing well. It's, you know, the Christmas. It's the silly season, as they say, back in Australia. I'm actually Australian, but living in Berlin.
Oh, man, that's amazing. What part are you from?
From Adelaide and spent a long time in Sydney as well. So we've got, you know, Adelaide has got some pretty strong crypto roots there. We've got Rusty Russell, one of the core devs of BTC there and working a lot with the Lightning stuff. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, man. I went to Sydney this past year and it was, man, such a beautiful, amazing time of my life. I love Australia.
Oh, fantastic, man. Good to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Give us some background.
Well, basically, I've been into alternative economies for a very long time. So in 2001 or 2000, I developed the world's first swap site where people could swap clothes instead of buying and selling. And I realized, man, this is a really crappy way to trade because if I really love your shirt and you like nothing that I've got up on the site, then the deal falls through because the deal falls through. But if we had a token or a credit or something in the middle, then you could, I could give you that and you could shop everywhere else in the marketplace. And of course, that is money. And then I was thinking, then I'll just reinvent the entire banking system. That sounds pretty crappy. So I was like, I wonder if there's some sort of digital thing we could put in the middle there. And of course, that hadn't been invented yet. But I did start looking around and discovered what the cypherpunks were doing on their mailing list, but also what eGold and some other people in Amsterdam were doing. And of course, this double spend problem kept on coming up. And I was like, oh, it's unsolvable. But I kept my ear to the train track, so to speak, and to sort of listen out for any rumblings of people solving this. And yeah, and then sort of late 2010, early 2011, I came across the white paper. Wow, man, they've solved it. She's done it. They've solved the double spend problem and been falling down that rabbit hole ever since. It's been a wild ride because being in the crypto community is kind of like living in a sci-fi novel. You know, we have these amazing events that go down on almost a weekly basis, you know, whether it's Silk Road rise and fall to the DAO being hacked, and you know, everyone having 2 weeks to come up with a solution, or was it a month or something? I can't remember now, but you know, and people scrambling. It's just an amazing place to be and to follow.
Absolutely, man. So thanks for diving into that. And it's amazing that your first thought, man, back in the early 2000s was like, how do I have this virtual currency that could create this marketplace? And fast forward, here we are years later, and that's obviously a living reality. But, you know, what was your first introduction into cryptocurrency and blockchain space? At what point I know you said you were familiar with cypherpunks and were staying up to date with everything, but like, what was the first like moment of this is cryptocurrency and blockchain?
Yeah, well, I guess the white paper. I can't quite remember. I think someone sent me the white paper, or a link to an article on like some forum, and I was like, whoa, and actually, it was the name Bitcoin that really made me open my eyes and take it seriously, because it sounded so close to BitTorrent, and so I could straight away understand what it was. You know, BitTorrent, distributed technology for moving files around, which took over from Napster, because Napster was this centralized service where you logged onto Napster. Napster took an index of all the music you had and then connected you to other peers using this centralized service. But then, of course, Napster got taken down by the authorities. And then, of course, the BitTorrent came along and they distributed this entire concept. And so when Bitcoin came along, I thought, oh, Bitcoin sounds very much like BitTorrent with a coin. Wow. And that's really the aha moment, because this is what I'd been looking for SwapStyle, was like some system where we could have a money that's not controlled by me or a central bank or anyone else, that's controlled by a network. And it wasn't actually what I was looking for, because I couldn't even imagine that at the time. I just was sort of vaguely trying to fiddle around to trying to see what people were coming up with. And when that white paper, Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer digital currency came along, I was like, wow, this is it, done. I mean, sadly, yeah. I didn't buy any way more of it, but at the time, but it was definitely technically brilliant, and it had a lot of interesting ideas. It has a lot of interesting ideas around game theory and how the whole thing works. So it was very much an experiment, and then I ended up putting it into SwapStyle. But SwapStyle was mainly for women and to swap clothes, and so it the target audiences were very different to the geeky sort of person that really understood. I remember getting a lot of emails saying, "What is this Bitcoin thing?" And the only thing you could yeah. buy with it was alpaca socks at the time. So it was a wacky time.
That is amazing. You're one of the first people I've met who was in it very early and had integrated into a marketplace, and that people could be using like at the beginning. And that's really cool. That's pretty unique.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many people actually used it, but I remember right. sending it to a lot of people. And I guess, you know, this is one of these moments where you think, wow, if I didn't do that, I would have. But at the same time, you know, you think, oh God, I probably gave away millions of dollars. But at the same time, you think, you know, if we didn't do that back then maybe it wouldn't have become what it's become. You know, really needed people to move it around and play with it and say, here, have, you know, 5 Bitcoin, have 10 Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah. It was very much needed. But so that was your first intro to it. And then fast forward. So, you know, tell us about your company, Vaulturo. You know, what is it? How'd you come up with the concept?
Yeah, well, like a lot of early adopters, I lost a lot of money in Mt. Gox, which was the first major exchange back then. And it went broke in 2014. I can't quite remember, but a while back. And 2014. And basically, I thought, wow, this is... It was after a string of collapsed online wallets and Mt. Gox and different services, and I thought, right, this is it. I'm getting sick of this, because the media back then was still stupid. You know, they still didn't understand it. So they would have headlines like, "The CEO of Bitcoin runs off with everyone's money," and of course that's ridiculous. You know, really, it was an exchange. It went broke. But the problem was, it was very intransparent. So nobody could ever see how liquid this exchange was. We had to, I mean, I think Roger Ver back then, Roger Ver made a video saying, "Here, so all the money's there," but it wasn't there. Unfortunately, it had been hacked. It was in fractional reserve, meaning they've got less money in their reserve than they owe their creditors. And so I thought, right, we've got to build an exchange where you have total transparency. And because Bitcoin, the blockchain allows absolute transparency. So we developed, me and my brother developed what's called the Glassbooks protocol. And we can go into that a little bit later if you want. But basically, it allows anybody to audit an exchange without, with quite, you know, actually anybody's grandma can audit an exchange. So you really don't need to know much about the blockchain or anything like that. And then we thought, well, the other problem is that a lot of exchanges, they deal in fiat. And many people don't know this, but when you've got fiat at an exchange, you have two counterparties that you're trusting. You have the exchange, that the exchange doesn't go bust or go run off or get hacked or whatever else. But you've also got banking behind that. So when you put money in a bank, it's not your money anymore. It legally belongs to the bank. That's why the bank pays you interest. That's why the bank can go off and speculate with those funds, because it's legally theirs. They just promise to pay you back when you want it. And most of the time that works. But when you, in Mt. Gox's case, Mt. Gox collapsed, and you get all these liquidators coming in and start eating up all the fiat currency, but also the Bitcoin, and starting to chew through that while they figure out all their legalities. And they're still doing that right now. They're still eating through the creditors' funds. And so we thought, okay, how can we change that? So with Voltoro, instead of dealing in fiat, you deal in allocated gold bullion sitting in a high security vaulting facility in Switzerland, fully insured and fully audited. And that's not something you can do with fiat. Banks cannot be audited. We can audit something like Tether and say, yes, Tether is, their bank accounts say that they've got that number of dollars, but you cannot actually audit the bank. The bank is totally intransparent. We don't know how liquid the bank is.
Right.
You know that. Yeah. So, and that goes for every other exchange. If they have fiat sitting in a bank account, you might say, oh, okay, let's get an auditor in there. And the auditor will go into internet banking for that exchange, go, yep, that number is correct. But we don't know, is the bank actually liquid? What are they speculating with those funds? So that was the thing of building an exchange where people traded between Bitcoin and physical allocated bullion. It's just chunks of gold sitting in vaults. They cannot be speculated with. They belong in as the customer's name, under their name as their property. So if you buy gold there, it's your property and it's off of our books. So if we go broke or anything happens to us, it doesn't matter. Liquidators can't touch our clients' assets because it's nothing to do with Voltoro. We just connect you with buyers and sellers of that gold.
Awesome. So let me break into that a little bit more. Thank you for clarifying that. I think that is something that's very much looked over in the sense of when people think about fiat, in particular with the bank, you know, once you give your money to the bank, technically that is theirs and they just promise to give it back. I think that is very important to highlight. And that's why I'm saying it again, because like just going back to the point of centralized versus decentralized, when it's centralized like that, technically they still have all the power, right? But going back to Voltoro. So, you know, just even looking at your website, and thank you for telling us about the story about, you know, don't get Mt. Gox. Do you even have it on the website and having it be backed by an actual hard asset like gold? Can you just dive into that a little bit more? Because I think that is really unique in how you're having actual hard assets that can be audited and be like, yeah, what we're saying is here is actually here.
Yeah. So, you know, the reason why a lot of people get into Bitcoin is because it's a rare number. It's a number and it can't be copied. It's found into existence. Some people mine it. They try to find this rare number. They find it and then they spend it into existence. And this is very much like gold. Gold is found into existence. Some people go out there, they look into the ground and they find gold and then they spend it into existence. Now, this is very different to fiat. Fiat is lent into existence with interest, and there's way more interest out there than actual currency. So because if I say, okay, I'm going to create the first money on this, I'm going to have a little island and I'm going to create the first money. I give you a dollar, which is the first dollar that's ever in existence. And I say, yeah, but you owe me $1.20 back. And you're like, well, what? How am I going to give you $1.20 back? There is only $1 on the entire island. You've given me it.
Right.
And I said, well, you have to wait for the second person over there to also borrow from me and then try to do a deal, get that 20 cents and pay me back. Okay. And of course, the second person then borrows a dollar and also owes me $1.20 and manages to do a trade. But now they've got even less money. They now owe us, they've got 80 cents because they paid 20 cents to the first person. Now they've got 80 cents, but they owe me $1.20. So everyone that borrows owes more back in as a whole, as a community. So the whole system is built so badly. It's corrupt from the maths. The maths is totally corrupt and wrong. So if we look at gold or Bitcoin, these rare numbers, these rare assets, there's none of this unequilibrium that's built into the system. It's basically finding something, spending it into existence. And so by pairing the two, and this is why I think like people like Barry Silbert or Peter Schiff on the other side, you know, Barry Silbert's like drop gold, and Peter Schiff's like screw Bitcoin. these juxtapositions are ridiculous because rare assets should be working together. And that's what we've tried to do with, or that's what we're doing with Voltoro, is allowing people to jump into a rare asset like gold from Bitcoin and then be able to jump back to Bitcoin when they want. So when they buy gold, it's either they buy it from us as a market makers, we're feeding more and more gold into the market, or they buy it from other people. And at the end of the day, they don't know whether they're buying it from us because it's an order book, just like a Kraken, just Stamp, or Coinbase Pro. There's a bunch of sellers and a bunch of buyers, and they're just trading that gold back and forth. And gold being in your name as your legal property means that we cannot speculate with it. We're not allowed to. We basically just have what's called a bailment contract. And bailment law means that you give us something, some physical good that it belongs to you, but we just look after it. And this is very different to bank, because a bank, like you mentioned and I mentioned before, when you give something, it's actually their property now. So this gold has also got a very long history of auditing and insurance. I mean, people talk about Bitcoin and all the scams that are running in crypto. Well, gold has got a very long history of scams. So it's very, very important to... there's been a lot of systems put in place to audit gold and to make sure it's there. So we use one of the largest auditing firms in the world, BDO International. They're one of the top five billion-dollar company auditing firm, and they come in and they basically, you know, count the gold, and they also check that it's been tested and all the rest of that good stuff. And so there's very good systems in place to do that. And gold is also a really nice self-regulated system, meaning that there's self-regulation run by the London Bullion Market Association, which states a set of rules. And when you're in with the gold industry, you basically follow those rules. And if you follow those rules, you can put a big check on your website or your shop saying, "Yep, we follow the LBMA regulations." And this is a really nice way of regulating, because you don't have to have like some big law arm that's ready to put people in prison. You basically say, well, if you don't follow those rules, you can't put the mark on your shop.
Right. And thank you for taking time to break that down even more and just explain like how important and unique of, I mean, a platform that you've been able to create and just have it be with such a hard and liquid asset that is gold. So kind of shifting gears a little bit, you know, I know you've been in this space for since the beginning and even before Bitcoin, and that you've probably had a ton of different projects that you have on your radar. What are some that you're still watching or that you think some others should be aware of that are going on?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, they talk about, you know, everything on the blockchain and this on the blockchain and that on the blockchain. But a lot of people talk, you know, it's been like this for a while, where the narrative has been crypto, it's not that interesting, but blockchain, it's really interesting. And I always think, no, not really. I mean, how many times a day do you need to use an immutable database? It's not very often. How many times a day do you need currency? Do you need money? Probably 5 or 6 times a day. So that's really interesting for me. And so, of course, Bitcoin as money, and I would even say, you know, other competitors like Dash who are really trying to make money is kind of interesting. But in terms of the blockchain side of people using an immutable database, I think where it's really interesting is things like in-game currencies, where you have non-fungible tokens representing in-game items, because we see a multi-billion-dollar industry being basically cornered by players like Steam and the rest of them. And there are a couple of projects out there trying to disrupt all that. We've got Satoshi Games. They work a lot with the Lightning Network and also with non-fungibles, and they're playing with that. But also, I think it's called Wax or something like that. I'm not sure. But these sorts of people are trying to, you know, whether I'm not sort of promoting any one project. I'm basically saying that's something to definitely keep an eye on, to say, because a digital item, you know, we work with physical gold, and we're also looking at tokenizing that gold, and that's a really hard thing to do. People are like, oh, just, you know, make an ERC-20 and that represents a gram of gold, but it's not that easy. There's also lots of things to think about, like fees and what happens if that token gets stolen or lost. Does that still represent the outside world? Whereas in the in-game or the digital realm, you're representing a digital token, something that can't be copied, and representing an item that's digital. And that's it's a beautiful interface. They work very, very well together. So I would definitely, I'm keeping my eye out on different players in that market, the non-fungible game market. Yeah.
Right. And I would agree with that. Through multiple people who I've interviewed on this podcast and learning about all the incredible things happening in the gaming space, paired with a speaker that we had at the Cryptocurrency Conference this past year, and just seeing like things like Decentraland and CryptoVoxels and just all the various games that are being made, and kind of like you said, with non-fungible tokens and in-app ways to spend money. It's a huge booming market that is here to stay. And as more products are being built on blockchain, like, there's just so much room for this to grow and to go, that I think that is really great insight into something for people to be looking out for. So thank you for that.
Yeah, definitely. And just to quickly add to that, there's a lot of projects where I just think, do you really need a blockchain for it? And I would say, look, if it's something that a government wants to shut down, then yeah. If it's something where it needs transparency, then I would say yeah. But there's a lot of projects like, oh, we just are going to put that on the blockchain. And you just think, why? You could just use a database. You know, database is extremely fast, extremely efficient. And you can also have multi-signature databases, you know, so you can make them more immutable. They don't always need blockchains. And I think this is something where people, after the ICO boom of 2017, are starting to wake up and realize, okay, not everything needs a blockchain. We might, you know, not just invest in everything that's got the word blockchain or AI attached to it.
Right. Yeah, man. And even with that, so in the next 6 months to a year, what are some things happening in both the crypto and blockchain space that you're keeping an eye on and that you think others should be looking out for as well?
I mean, I think now that we've been in a sort of, I mean, some people call it a bear market. I wouldn't call it a bear market because we're up, you know, four times since sort of the start of the year. So it's not really a bear market, depending on what token you're holding. Of course, I'm generally talking about Bitcoin.
Right. It's all relative to time, right?
Yeah, it's all relative to time. But I would say definitely just spend this time to keep stacking sats and doing it. Not in, all in one go, stack it every week, every month, whatever you can afford. Slowly diversify too. Have a little bit in property, of course, have a little bit in gold. But I would definitely keep an eye out for the next sort of slow, as we start getting towards booming again, as the bear market starts to hibernate and we see the bulls starting to run. This could... hopefully it doesn't happen too quickly, because otherwise it just happens and then it booms and you get a whole lot of people losing as they jump in again. But hopefully we see a slow bull starting to come back and just, you know, walk down the street instead of running and smashing into everything. But I definitely think in 2020 we will see the return of a bull market, and to get ready for that. If you're building a project in the space, you know, this is a perfect time to build. This is a perfect time to get ready for scale, because a lot of businesses in this space, they couldn't keep up in the bull market of 2017. Their systems fell over. They just too many people. So this is a time to really harden your projects, get ready for it, and then, you know, get ready to run with the bulls.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for all the incredible information you've shared with us and knowledge you've dropped on us. But before you go, what is a final thought you want to leave with all of our listeners today?
I would say we're very lucky to be alive and witness the coming of a new type of asset, a new type of money, something that cannot be stopped. And it's really we're living in a time where huge amounts of change will happen in the financial markets as well as other markets that we don't even know yet, and like data markets. So you know, don't discount things. Stay away from scams, and that's a very easy thing to say, you know, try to figure out what a scam looks like, because I think the problem with this industry is that a lot of people get scammed and then they call for regulation, they call for government to come in with their big superhero costumes and start, you know, say, oh, I'll save you, and really they don't save anybody, they just put up barriers of entry and make it hard for startups to innovate. So what we do need is education, teach each other. And this is why podcasts like yours are so fantastic, because they teach people what is a good project, what does a good project look like, and what does a bad project look like. If a project says to you guaranteed returns, 30% returns week after week or whatever, anything that says that is an obvious scam. Stay away
from anything.
Red flag. It's a huge red flag. So learn what red flags are, because a lot of people, the governments have protected us so much from risk. You know, they're obsessed with de-risking our entire life, except for when it comes to poker machines or you know, dog racing or something like that. You know, there you can lose your money. But in terms of investing, they're so protective over everybody. I don't know why. I think it's more protecting the VC space. But anyway, that people have forgotten what risk really looks like. So teach yourselves, your family members, what a bad investment looks like, and teach yourselves what a good investment looks like. Learn how to do your due diligence. That's what I would say.
Absolutely. And education, education, education. We will preach that all day, every day. And I think that's a really great final thought to leave everyone with. Do your due diligence, get your own information, make your own decisions. But the only way that you can do that is through getting the information and educating yourself before taking action.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Joshua, again, thank you so much for joining. What are some different ways that people can learn about Valtoro and just connect with you?
Yeah, well, you can follow us on Twitter. The official one is at Valtoro. That's Vault, as in a gold vault, V-A-U-L-T, and Oro, which is Spanish for gold, Valtoro. Or you can follow me personally. It's at J Scigala. That's J-S-C-I-G-A-L-A on Twitter. And I tweet about all sorts of stuff, and mainly crypto. And you can ask me and contact me there.
Absolutely perfect. Well, again, thank you for joining us on the show. And for everyone listening, stay cryptocurrent.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of Cryptocurrent. For more information on this episode and all of our episodes, please visit us at www.crypto-current.co. Stay up to date with the latest news in cryptocurrency. You'll receive daily emails Monday through Friday that are personalized and curated content specific to you and your interest, powered by artificial intelligence. Are you an accredited investor looking to invest in cryptocurrency? Crescent City Capital can help. Go to crescentcitycapital.com for more information. If you're finding value in our content, please take 5 minutes to leave a 5-star review and a great comment. Also, please make sure to share this podcast with others. Hello, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the quality of this podcast. I can only thank my amazing producer, Andrew DeRitter with DeRitter Productions, who has put this together. If you have any podcast, visual, or video needs, please go to DeRitterProductions.com. That's DERITTER Productions.com.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Cryptocurrent with Richard Carthon. We'll be back with more exciting developments from the world of blockchain and cryptocurrency next week. But until then, stay cryptocurrent.
Please use available exits now.